Welcome to Women Reconnecting, a show dedicated to helping women discover the missing link to wellness by taking listeners on a journey away from stress, fatigue, and overwhelm to a life they love. It's time to ascend from the daily stresses of life by reconnecting to your inner radiance so you can play full out and feel alive. With your host, the Reconnection Catalyst herself, Lisa Mizells. Hello, everyone. This is Lisa Mizells, founder of Femana and host of the Women Reconnecting Show. And I'm really pleased to bring you my guest today, who is going to be talking about finding your way to happiness through ordinary moments, which I think we all need to know more about. But before we jump into the interview, let me just tell you a little bit about Bonaventure Druchel. This inspiring woman is known for really helping people feel happy and kind of integrating that into how and into their perception. She's often referred to as the sunflower spirit. I love that. Bonnie is an inspirational artist, author, heal your life workshop leader, and life coach in the philosophy of Louise Hay. And she developed a deep love of the healing powers of nature's beauty while growing up, surrounded by the lush gardens and farmland of her grandparents in western Massachusetts. I believe nature heals. It has always been my inspiration in art and in life. I can go out into the woods or stroll through a garden and come away feeling happy and relaxed. That's what Bonnie says. Bonnie's spoken at women's conferences and continues to work as a guide, helping women transform their lives. She says, I love being a guide for women, to see them become happier and more relaxed, being loving and kind to ourselves while doing things that make us happy. That is what makes the process of transformation a whole lot easier. Now, Bonnie's story is included in Louise Hay's book, Modern Day Miracles. She's authored one book of her own, Sunflower Adventure, Always Facing the Sun. I love that. And she is known for her inspiring artwork and photographs. In addition to her photographs, gracing the billboard style screens on 42nd Street in New York City, Bonnie's artwork has been exhibited both nationally and internationally. In the marketplace, her work has been commissioned for inspirational giftware and a host of commercial venues. Bonnie lives in Western Massachusetts with her husband, Tom, and their cat, Jasper. So I'm so excited today to bring you Bonnie Druchel. Welcome, Bonnie.
Oh, thank you so much, Lisa. I really appreciate it. I feel honored to be with you today and with your listeners. It's a great honor. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm really excited to talk to you because this is what I truly believe. I really believe that we're here to try and find our way to happiness. You know, we're here on a path to. I mean, I feel like this life is for us to enjoy. So you talk about ordinary moments. How do you find happiness in ordinary moments?
Well, I can only speak from my own experience in life. The way I have found my way to happiness is through like being present and being in the moment and not in my head. Because lived in my head forever. And I remember doing a meditation retreat, a 10-day meditation retreat. It was silent. And so you meditate like for an hour, three times a day. And then at night you would be with a group of people. But when I was with myself, I had like a million thoughts racing through my head. I couldn't even stand being with myself, you know? So like after that experience, and then taking some classes about living in the moment, I was really able to be here now. And it wasn't like for like an hour I'm here. It was like moments. Okay, I'm here in the moment. Oh, wow, look at that tree. Oh my gosh, look at that flower. It's gorgeous. Wow, I'm driving in my car and the sun is setting and I can see the sun radiating the telephone wires, and they're orange. You know, just like little moments like that, which brought me to happiness. And so I have made that a habit of looking for the good every day in my life. Like even before I get out of bed, you know, sometimes I have a bad dream or whatever, and it's like, oh gosh. And then I just said, well, I'm thankful, you know, for my bed, my covers, my pillows. I'm thankful for my home. So I just keep going through this gratitude list in my head. And like it just shifts me and gets me back into the moment and being myself, you know, which, you know, I'm a happy person, but it's just like, it was just like a moment by moment getting there. You know, when I went through some depression years ago. And so like on my way to getting out of that dark place, it might have just been like a blip. I could feel like a blip of happiness, you know, and it's just like, oh, wow, that feels great. And so it would just build on itself, this happiness. And before you know it, you know, I was just happy. There's a quote by, I'm doing this 30-day manifest happiness challenge, which we're on day four now. So if anyone wants to join, I'd be happy to share that information at how they can join. They can just send me a message on
Okay.
Facebook. But like the quote is, happiness is not something ready-made. It comes from your own actions. And that's from the Dalai Lama, the 14th Dalai Lama. And it's true, you know, it's like you have to take action and you have to look for the good. You have to sometimes force it to look for the good if you're not in a good state of mind, or you're going through a breakup or health challenges or whatever. You just have to like actually like take action to look for the good. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. And I was wondering maybe if, because I know for me personally, the more time I spend practicing being present, the happier I am. So I totally get what you're saying. But for those listeners who may not know what it feels like to be, what the, you know, what it feels like, the difference between living in your head and being present. Can you kind of explain the feeling of the two different pieces there?
Sure, I'll try. Just from my experience again, it would just be racing thoughts. I'd have all these racing thoughts about, I'd be thinking about either the past and the bad things I went through, or I'd be thinking about the future and, oh my God, am I going to have enough of money? And, oh, what will they think? You know, so it's just like I had this racing all the time. And when I got into the moment, it was just like stillness, I guess, quiet. Sometimes I felt like I was only the only person on the planet. And let's see.
Well, I think that's, yeah, I mean, stillness. I feel like when I agree with you. When I first started to meditate, to try and just sit in silence, all that would come up would be like you said, all these things that I had to do and things that I didn't do and things that, oh my gosh, there was this idea and that idea. And it's hard to quiet your mind if you don't practice. And then once you get to that state where you can just be, it's like bliss. It's like complete, there's nothing wrong. And that's kind of what I experienced the first time. It's like, there's nothing wrong in this moment when I'm in the moment. So I think that's why bringing that into the moment, into, you know, throughout your day brings you happiness, 'cause there's nothing wrong. Nothing
Right.
wrong. Yeah.
And you know, it's like there's that's really all there is this moment. And that took me a long time to understand, honestly. I couldn't get that. But I get that now because, you know, you can't go back to the past. And like, there's no future really. I mean, because it's always just the moment. although, you have to plan for your future and stuff like that, I guess. So one thing that came to me is, say you're at a lake and, it's a beautiful day and it's a great temperature. It's just not too humid. It's just perfect, And there's all these puffy, beautiful white clouds slowly moving in the gorgeous cerulean blue sky. And you're looking out at the lake and it's just calm. It's just calm, And you might see a bird fly by or maybe a fish will jump out of the water. But it's kind of like that. That's kind of how I see the present moment.
Yeah, I love that. That's great. So what would you recommend to our listeners to do to find happiness and, and to find those ordinary moments?
Well, I would recommend making a list, taking out your pad of paper and a pen, and just making a list of things that you like or that make you happy. And then, so you have a list, and then start looking for those things like everywhere you go before you, when you're getting into your car to go somewhere, you're jumping on the subway, think about. Look around you and see if you can see something that's on your list that makes you happy. Like before I get into my car, I look out and I love looking at the clouds. So simple, but they're all different shapes and they're always puffy or lines or whatever. So I'll look at that and that will bring me happiness. Then I'm in my car and it's, well, I love my car. And then I'll look at the trees and it's just like, wow. The trees are always going through some sort of, they're either moving or they're budding or the leaves are turning for, because I live in Western Massachusetts, like they're turning all these amazing colors. So like I'll look at the trees and then I'll just like I just bless everyone on the road. I mean it's I've been doing this for years, but it's just like a love and light to everyone in front of me. Love and light to everyone behind me. And, I just want to have a great time. And so just little things like that. So look for what brings you joy and happiness. And it could be something so simple as, you have an orange and like when you peel it has that amazing essential oil smell. Just little insignificant things, really.
Which,
That's for me, but like for someone else, everyone has their own what brings them happiness. So it's going to be different for your viewers than it is for me or than it is for you. You know what I mean? So make a list of what brings you happiness and what you like to do, and then start doing things that bring you great joy, even if it's just like for a minute. I don't know, dance around, smell a flower. You just got to find things that make you happy and do them consistently and make it a habit because life is a habit,
Yeah, I totally agree. For me, it's I love anything beautiful. So I do. I love looking at the clouds. I love that's like my favorite thing to do.
What brings you happiness, Lisa?
Yeah. And things, smelling my flowers, I make it a point when I go out in the morning to feed my animals. I make it a point to stop and smell the roses that I have. Or any flowers, or pick up and look at the beauty of just the symmetrical beauty of flowers that are like the wildflowers that are out right now. Just, the feel of my horse's nose, just, little tiny things that we really do have miracles every moment. And I think looking for those things that we think are just there and just, like we think life is just here. But life is so much richer than that. You just have to kind of look for that richness, I think.
Yes, and you said miracles. I mean, if you just and you and your listeners just look around your room where you are or wherever you are, I mean, there's miracles all around us. I mean, I grew up in the, I grew up before internet was around or, cell phones. I remember my friend calling me 20 years ago and saying that there's going to be these cell phones without wires. I thought she was crazy, And now it's just like, it's no longer a phone, it's a computer. And, you can access the web and, call and pay your bills all on this handheld thing. So, it's a, that technology is, I see it as a miracle. Like Einstein said, you can see everything as a miracle or nothing as a miracle. And you have that choice. So I just feel like the more you see everything as a miracle, the more you'll just, that will just build and you'll just keep seeing miracles everywhere. I mean, look at us human beings. Look where we come from. I mean, we're miracles, but we don't know it. And then, like I love sunflowers and I'm always amazed that I have a little seed and then I can poke a hole in the ground, put my seed in, put the dirt back over it, a little bit of water and sunshine, rain, and voila, within a few months, I have this tall sunflower. I mean, we just forget. I think because we're all like brought up in this, we're brought up, it's like we're brought into this world having everything that we don't realize that everything's a miracle. You got to step back and really see it. I mean, you have the choice to see it that way. It's up to you how you want to live your life. But I know that I was kind of angry years ago and complained a lot and blamed a lot and was kind of unhappy a lot. So, like, I know it's possible for anyone to reach great levels of happiness and have a great life because I have transformed that in my own life. So I'm just speaking from my own experience,
Yeah, so maybe let's explore that a little bit because I think that would really relate to, our listeners could really relate to that. What was that tipping point where you were the you looked outside of yourself for happiness maybe, or you were complaining and not happy and blaming and all of those things that you said. What was the tipping point where you said, this isn't going to work for me anymore?
Well, the real tipping point was about 30 years ago. I had a health scare. Okay. And the health scare was, I'm not going to go into it, but it was like I had the awareness. I was like in my late 20s, so I had the awareness. Wow, I could die. It's like that was the awareness. And then right after that, I was handed a book called You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay.
I love that book.
Yeah, and that was the transforming period in my life because I didn't know anything about these concepts, like thoughts create your reality, or you have a choice of how you want to live your life, or you can have a great life, and so that was really the tipping point. And it has been a process of unfolding. It does not happen overnight. But if you stick to it and you do it, and crap comes up, stuff comes up. And what I really feel is like you gotta let that stuff come up, those unhappy memories or you're mad or whatever. You gotta get it out of your body because you don't want it stored in your cells.
No,
So,
I agree
yeah.
with that. That's great. And it's like you said, it's choice. I mean, it's the moment. You can be happy the moment you decide that you're going to make a little shift in how
A
you
little
think a
shift.
thing, a little shift, and start to take charge of your own self. Because when we look outside of ourselves, we look for other people to make us happy. We look for other things. We look for situations to change. Why isn't this changing? Why is this like this? Why, we start to look outside. It's not there. It's you have to really in look inside and see what can I do? What choice can I make right now in the moment to shift, right?
Yes. And, you know, now it's scientifically proven that, you know, having happy thoughts really changes your physiology.
Right.
And it creates new neural pathways in your brain. Mm-hmm. And an example of that is, say you're looking at a beautiful, tall, green grass, a field of tall green grass. And say you walk from, you know, north to south, and you just keep walking. Well, a path is going to be created. So like when you're doing your happiness affirmations or feeling good, you're actually creating new neural pathways in your brain. You know, and that scientist, Emoto, the guy, the scientist who did the water experiments. Do you know about him?
Tell me more. I think I know who you're talking about, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, he took water from different bodies of water all over the world, and he would like put it in a jar and write a word like love, and mm-hmm. he taped love mm-hmm. on the jar, but the love part, the written part was facing the water, so it was blank on the outside. Mm-hmm. And then he would take a word that said hate, and so he'd do all these different words, and he'd have them like, I don't know for how long he would have them sit there, but then he would take a molecule, put it under a microscope, and look at the water molecule. Mm-hmm. And the words with love and beauty, the crystals were gorgeous.
Yeah.
But the words with hate and negative words, they were all deformed.
Yeah, like shards of glass.
Yeah, and we are like 70% water. You know, so all this new science is actually proving like what Louise Hay has been teaching for, you know, forever. Mm-hmm. And it just, it's an exciting time, you know, that we really get to choose.
Yeah, I agree. It is exciting. And our thoughts do create our life. I mean, we have, it's like you were mentioning that you had a health scare.
Yeah.
And that's what made you decide to kind of really start to explore and live. And
yeah.
So many times we wait until something like that happens before we really start to live. And I think that's, you know, the purpose of this show is to really kind of explore these different possibilities. You don't have to wait until something's wrong, really wrong,
before
you can start to feel alive. I love that. So, let's see, there was another question that I wanted. So a lot of people might think about, they don't like themselves. You know, they feel like they're maybe not the right size, or they've chosen the wrong partner in their life, or, you know, they're having problems with their family. How would you say people can be happy in those situations?
Well, I can just speak from my own experience, because like I have a very wonderful husband. We've been married for 30 years. So I can just speak from my own self of like making myself happy and loving myself. I remember, well, it was like 30 years ago. Look, I was with I was getting therapy, and the guy knew about Louise Hay. So he made me take a mirror and say to myself, I love you. Well, I couldn't do it. Mm. I couldn't even look at myself in the mirror and say it. I couldn't do it. Mm. It took me years to look in the mirror and say, I love you. Well, now I can do it and look in a mirror and say, Bonnie, I love you. I really, really love you. Mm. However, you know, when you pass a mirror in the bathroom mirror or in your bedroom or wherever it is, just start picking out something that you really like about yourself. Oh, Lisa, you're going by a mirror. Oh, Lisa. Oh, I love my eyes. Or I love my smile. Or, you know, I love my fingernails. Just little things like that. And, you know, when you're looking at your body in the mirror, you have no clothes on. Just, I know it's hard, because our tendency is to criticize ourselves. But just to love, if you have rolls and fat, back fat, you know, whatever it is you don't like on yourself, just start loving it. Just do it. I love you. I love you for who you are. You know, we all try to live up to these supermodels, and I will never be one. You know, I just, for years, I try to be like, you know, better, you know, always criticizing myself because I didn't fit the mold of that model, that thin model. And it just will never happen. So I've totally accepted myself for who I am. And, you know, I can lose 10 pounds. And I will once I start exercising more. But, you know, I'm just going to love myself for who I am, like right now. And because I catch myself criticizing myself all the time. And it's like, that's the thing. It's like you got to stop when you catch yourself criticizing yourself. Like, just stop it and switch it to something like, I love you. Hey, I love that piece of hair on your head. Or, you know, just little shifts like that. And you'll find that as time goes on, you'll just make it a habit and you'll just start loving yourself for who you are.
Yeah, it's just building those little habits, I think, is really, really important. Now, I love what you're saying, because it's true. The first thing we do, first tendency we have is to pick something out we don't like. And to just make that little shift about picking out something you do like when you see yourself, it makes you feel good. It helps you stand in your power. It helps you really, you know, honor yourself. I think it's really important. So we're almost done with our time here, but I wanted to ask you, what is one strategy that you could give to the listeners to help them bring about happiness right now and just feel alive and full of possibilities? What is something they could do to make that shift?
I would say, to breathe, like to take in a deep breath. It's so simple. It's like just taking a deep breath, because like something's breathing you. Okay. Yeah. You're not even aware that you're breathing. You just breathe. So being grateful for your breath, being grateful for your breath.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. And I hear you have a free gift for our listeners.
Oh, I do. Let's see. I interviewed 14 women on how to manifest more happiness in your own life. And so these experts I interviewed share their techniques and their real life adventures into happiness. So I'm so happy that I can share that with your listeners.
That's going to be great. That
is totally inspiring.
Yes. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Bonnie. What I'm going to do is I'm going to put all of your information. So the blog on the blog on Femana.com, you're going to, listeners can go there to get the free gift, how to manifest more happiness in your own life. And then I'll also put your, how to connect with you on social media and your website. And you want to tell people what your website is?
Sure. It's growbloomshine.com. So GROWBLOOM, growbloom, SHINE, growbloomshine.com.
Awesome. Perfect. And that will be on the website. So thank you, Bonnie, so much for your time. This was really fun exploring how to be happy. I loved this interview. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Lisa. I really appreciate it. It's an honor. Okay. I hope that helps someone out there.
I know it's going to help some people out there. All right. Well, listeners, look forward to the next episode and we'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Listen to Women Reconnecting, the only show that talks about the missing link to wellness and fulfillment, with your host, the Reconnection Catalyst herself, Lisa Mizells, and her guests as they share what's working now to feel alive and fulfilled in life. Would you like to ascend from the daily stresses of life and discover how to stop merely existing and how to play full out so you can feel alive again? Listen as guests share simple tips to step up your wellness factor and excitement for living so you can create the life you want. This show is not intended to replace any medical advice from a licensed practitioner. Consult your doctor before trying something new.
Welcome to Women Reconnecting. This is Lisa Mizells with Femana, and today I'm bringing you Stevie Ann Pettit, and I'm really very excited to bring you Stevie Ann because she's going to be talking about Lighten Up Enlightenment, or conscious. She's a conscious comedian, and she's going to share a little bit about her book, and I'll save that the title for after I tell you a little bit about Stevie Ann. So she is a conscious comedian, author, and speaker, and she uses humor to engage and inspire audiences to laugh at our human foibles. Her mission is to lighten up enlightenment through workshops, presentations, and published works. And she believes that each of us are destined for greatness and often feel as though finding joy is deemed a dark and heavy journey, when in reality, we are one purposeful punchline away from peace at any given time. And so she thinks that the greatest expression of self is through conscious comedy. And so she is a conscious comedian, and she finds humor in everything in life, not necessarily at the expense of others, but she can poke fun at all of us as a collective whole. And she says that she's fortunate enough to say that she's typically in a place of gratitude and joy. And when she's not, she tries to spin her fleeting moments of discontent into something that humbly and hilariously affects her mood into one of joy and bliss. Stevie Ann says we all have stories. And she says she doesn't completely subscribe to the idea that they define us, but she can say that laughter has been the best medicine that she knows. She's going to talk a little bit about her her background and her story, so I'm going to leave that for just a minute. But Stevie Ann's dream is to continue to publish work that allows people to be amused and inspired. And her first book that she's going to be talking about is called Egos Are Like Farts. And I know we all want to hear what that is about. So I'm going to just go ahead and introduce Stevie Ann. Stevie Ann, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Lisa. I'm so excited.
Yeah, this is great. I'm really excited too. And so, you know, just to start out, maybe you can take a minute and just introduce yourself, talk about a little bit about what you do, and maybe we can go into the book a little bit in a minute.
Sure. Wow, let's see. Well, my name is Stevie Ann. I'm a mother of two. About 2 years ago, I began doing, you know, writing a little bit and doing some comedy, some stand-up comedy around my spiritual journey as it was evolving. A lot of folks are kind of familiar with the work of Oprah and Eckhart Tolle, and they often reference this observing the ego and kind of realizing that there were more than meets the eye and that we're more than the mind chatter in our head. And it was really great to just kind of understand this new spiritual journey and separate from all the chatter in my head. It helped me a great deal. But then it kind of got to a point where it was kind of dark and heavy, and it was a lot of work. You know, I was kind of hard on myself, like, oh gosh, I must be enlightened. And so I was like, gosh, the only way I'm going to really be able to take this every day and do it is if I make it fun and if I lighten up enlightenment. And all my life I've been a little bit of the class clown, a little bit of a joker. And so I started to compare the ego to farts because I was trying to observe myself expressing all day long and be a little bit more mindful about how I expressed. And so it was crazy. It became like this 2 a.m. divinely awakened by, you know, people call them divine downloads, you know, in the spiritual community. Mm-hmm. Who knows? You know, I don't know, but it was certainly something that was beyond me. And I just was furiously writing at 2 a.m. till about 4 a.m., all these different comedic comparisons. And it has turned into a really, I don't even know, it's taken off. It's, you know, and so I'm really blessed and honored, and I'm glad to be on your show today to share it and see if it resonates, you know, with anyone else in your audience and if they can find their own ways to lighten up enlightenment.
Oh, I think that's great. Yeah, I mean, because we're all trying, I mean, I think we all know that just living the status quo is not what we want to do. We all know that mm-hmm. there's something, you know, more out there for us, but that yeah. pathway to get there is confusing.
Right.
And so that's kind of what the show is about. It's kind of opening that up and having people come on and talk about all the different ways that there that it's possible to really enjoy life and really, you know, be present. And I think presence is really, really important. And
yes.
Mm-hmm. As we go through our busy lives, there's not enough of that presence. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background, because I know that has a lot to do with, you know, why you are the way you mm-hmm. are and
sure.
how you think. So, yeah.
Well, you know, I think we all have very interesting childhoods to whatever degree. You know, we all observe interesting things and we all perceive things in an interesting way based on our environments. And mine happened to be, I did witness and I don't, you know, necessarily find myself a victim, but I experienced childhood sexual abuse by my stepfather. And fortunately, you know, my mother believed me. She immediately kicked him out of the home. But unfortunately, she had suppressed a lot of trauma that had happened to herself as well as a child, and she became mentally ill. I think she took on herself that she just couldn't believe that she married a man that, you know, would do that. So she ended up being awarded to the state. She was mentally ill. And then I was awarded to the state as a child. So I grew up in foster and group homes from 12 to 17 years of age. And that was really interesting. It was really, really interesting. Lots of different homes and different environments and crazy, I mean, amazing stories. Just remarkable to even think back to some of my peers and what they'd been through themselves. And the interesting thing was, throughout that entire time, I was always so well received by all the different groups, ethnicities, demographics, and even the mentors in each and every one of those homes. There was this childlike wonderment, I guess, this innocence that I still had, and it was very jovial and genuine and really crass, to be honest. I've always kind of been a little crass, but I remember, like, even some of the most stoic of therapists, because when you're in these homes, they expect you to have, you know, you have daily counseling sessions and group activities, and then you see your therapist, you know, a couple times a week, and I had all sorts of therapists and psychologists and you name it, and I remember even the most stoic, I would say sometimes these really wise beyond my years puns that were actually inappropriate too when I was talking about the abuse, and they'd lose their cool. They'd start laughing with me, and it was crazy. But you know what was nice was I actually felt like, oh my gosh, I cracked them. Like, this means that they see me as a human being right now, not some, you know, thing to study, you know?
Yeah, it's relatable. The relatability.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And here I was, you know, probably 2 decades their junior, you know, and mm-hmm. sitting in this seat, but I was always able to make people laugh, even if it was inappropriate humor. And so I kind of knew at that moment that was how I got through things, but it was also a strength of mine. It was an interesting, unique Stevie point, you know, it was something unique to me. And that carried on. I ended up, I was so well articulate, I suppose you could say, that leaving the detention homes, at 17, I was able to get both parents to sign for me to go into the military. And I joined the military as a military police officer for almost 12 years. And I was deployed all the time. But again, it was my humor that in under the worst of conditions and in under some of the most questionable exercises that we were practicing in the military, my humor, like, again, it was pretty much the only thing that would allow me to be a mentor for all my proteges and just even myself. So I ended up, I got out of the Navy not even 3 years ago. I have a 7 and a 6-year-old now. So at the time I was deploying away from them quite a bit. And I just said, you know, I can't do this. I got to be with my kids. And so I honorably discharged and I was like, gosh, you know, what am I going to do? I've been doing military police work for almost, you know, a dozen years. So what's the civilian equivalent? And of course it was, you know, law enforcement, but I didn't want to do that. So I had enough of law, all my, you know, between the group homes and then all that, you know. So I just thought, what I literally typed in civilian sector equivalent of mentoring, because that was my favorite thing to do in the military, and life coaching came up. And that's, I ventured out here in Arizona. I went to SWEHA, the Southwest Institute of Healing Arts, where I learned life coaching. And then I went on to do the advanced program. And then I learned about hypnotherapy, did that advanced program. And it's just been, and now I teach there, which is so wild. It's just really, really wild. So it's amazing how, I don't know, everything kind of rolled up into this amazing opportunity for me to just be the fullest expression of myself. And I would, if I had suppressed that comedy, I don't know that I would be as well received as I am and have all these amazing opportunities that I have. And so that's a lot of what the book's about too, is just expression, authentic expression, and not holding it in.
Yeah, it's, I mean, listening to your story, it's great because I can hear your kind of like your guidance, your internal guidance leading you, you know, leading down the, you know, the breadcrumb path to where you are now. Mm-hmm. So, do you feel like it was a conscious movement forward, or was it kind of like you just, like, how do, if you could tell women how to find their intuition and know, you know, go with their knowing and their guidance, how would you explain that?
I honestly believe that we all have very unique gifts and graces. Mm-hmm. And when we do not suppress our fullest expression, when we surround ourselves with people who allow us to be authentic, when we surround ourselves with people who are authentic themselves, that just, it's like this passionate ping pong where we just show up all the time passionate. And some of my girlfriends, my really good friends, they say, if it isn't an F yes, it's an F no. And I kind of like that analogy because it helped me kind of as a compass, you know, kind of an abrupt one, but it just said, if it's not joyful for you, right, don't do it. And oftentimes, especially as women, we compromise, yes, all day long.
Yep.
And so we suppress our expression and we don't show up authentically because we don't want to hurt someone's feelings, because we don't want to say something and be judged for it, because we don't want to have to clear the air later if we say something that, you know, might not be well received. And so it's really finding our voice and being able to express authentically. That's the biggest thing, because, and we'll know, our intuition is definitely, it's those gut feelings, it's the goosebumps that we get. And really, it's just even, you could even tell in your throat. If you're not able to authentically express, you can, our bodies tell us so much. I mean, you know that, Lisa, that our bodies don't lie, yeah, you know? So, and that's why it's important too to feed them well and to nourish our bodies, because really they're far more than just a vessel for us. They're more than a vehicle. They're a compass. They're helping us navigate our purposeful paths.
Yeah. Can you speak a little bit more about that? Because I know that you talk a little bit about nutrition and eating, how that has to do with egos.
Yes. Okay. So much like we digest. It's important for us to, we're digesting all this information that's happening around us. We're digesting the food and the things that we put in our body, and then we're able to, you know, eliminate what doesn't serve us, but we're absorbing what does. It is the exact same thing with everything happening around us in this human experience when it comes to egos. Everyone is expressing who they are and what they're about. Now, whether it's authentic or not is up to them, but ultimately, we're all just here in this human experience, and we're here to experience what it's like to express and to be the greatest expression of ourselves as whomever created us. You know, whatever your belief system may be, we are here to experience being who we are. And much like the things that we eat and digest, and we are sometimes insensitive and intolerant to certain things, it is the same with egos. People can share and express something that we are super sensitive to and we are intolerant to. Mm-hmm. And likewise, as women, sometimes we suppress our expression because we don't want to offend another person. We don't want them to find us offensive. Maybe they can't tolerate us as the fullest expression of ourselves. And it's no different than taking in the things that we eat. Either it's good for you, it's bad for you. Either it resonates or it doesn't. Either it fuels you on your purposeful path or it doesn't. And so it's the same thing with expression as it is food. We need to give ourselves environments that nourish us and that fuel us. Or if other people are insensitive or intolerant, or we find ourselves insensitive and intolerant, we just need to switch up our lifestyle, you know?
Yeah, it's like being, you know, really paying attention, tuning into yourself and being aware
yes.
of what is actually going on. And that's when I do leap therapy, that is the nutrition protocol that I do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, great. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, what you're saying, I can see how it relates, because you have to start with the minimal things that are, the minimal food items that are triggering an immune response in your body. So
yes.
you start with just the minimal, the things that you know you can tolerate, and you
exactly.
and it just mm-hmm. the whole process leads you through just what you're saying, what you can, what feels good to you and what doesn't. And when mm-hmm. you finish going through the six phases, you don't want to eat the stuff that doesn't feel good, because you know.
Right.
So
this is a lot like family gatherings, you know. We can't stand certain people, you know, and it's like, oh, I don't even want to do Christmas or Thanksgiving because it's just too much. Mm-hmm. Okay, so allow yourself to be in that environment for just long enough that then when you don't want to take any more, you don't want to digest any more information coming your way, you pardon yourself, you excuse yourself, and you go on to another environment that's healthy and whole for you. Mm-hmm. And then before you know it, you're so in alignment and so in tune with what feels right and feels good that either things around you just kind of change and the conversations kind of cease, the ones that you didn't care for, or you just don't even find yourself in those environments anymore. And so it's exactly the same thing. You're introducing things little by little, and you find that you're either completely okay with not having them in your lifestyle any longer, or you build up a tolerance slowly but surely.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Now, when you're saying, you were just speaking of something, and what came up for me is people are, especially women, we're afraid of change. So we're afraid to change our environment, or we're afraid that mm-hmm. that things are going to change around us and that it's going to become uncomfortable. But can you speak a little bit to that?
Sure. You know, and I can truly only speak because of experience. It is one of those things where you hear the adage all the time that you're at the edge of the mountain and you think that you're going to fall, but you're going to fly. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, you honestly only will find out when you jump. And it's almost like the wings aren't activated unless you're going at least 10 miles per hour. So it's like you can't just kind of like hop, skip, a little jump, and then be like, come on, wings. It's, you really got to kind of full throttle it. So one of the best ways to do this, I think, is finding an outlet, maybe with strangers, maybe a meetup group, but where you can authentically express for the first time ever, because something will happen. When you authentically let go and release the things that you have been holding in, it'll surprise you how much better you will feel. it's no different than flatulence. You know, you don't want to hold that in. There's a reason that we have this process. And the thoughts that come through our minds, it's the same thing. It's just an activity taking place, and we have to express it and expel it. We can choose how we're going to do that, but we need to find those spaces where it's safe for us to express fully. And to just, what that does, no different than flatulence, is it creates inner peace. You know, we're holding on to these things and we're terrified of change. We're terrified of judgment, perhaps, after we've expressed our ego. But in truth, the sooner we do it, the sooner we get rid of the people that can't tolerate us and that find us offensive, and the sooner we attract like-minded people who can stand to be around us in our greatest, fullest expression.
Yeah. I love that. Now, if somebody's not comfortable, because I have a lot of women in the audience that are holding back and aren't comfortable and are, you know, feel stuck, what can you tell them? What is their, how do they navigate to that point where they feel authentic? Because they may not even know who they are authentically.
Yeah, that's a good question. I was very fortunate that I went to a school where it was almost, they expected all the misfits to show up there because that's just what they attract. And slowly but surely, I would kind of come out of my shell and I'd have some puns here and there throughout class, and it was always well received. So maybe even finding meetup groups or perhaps an improv class, that might be really great, because it's expected of you to be out of control and to be out of your mind, which is a great place to be sometimes, because our mind is where a lot of crazy stuff happens. So improv might be really great. Meetup groups where things that you're truly interested in, but you just haven't given yourself the time to go, even once a month. If you're into aliens, if you're into knitting, if you're into Bigfoot, find those similar groups, just something that speaks to you. These people don't know you, and it's expected for you to go to those places and express. They want dialogue, and they're meeting with the sole purpose of talking about the very niche industry item, that the category that you guys have come together to talk about. So those might be some options: meetups, improv, maybe a speakeasy, just anything where we're allowing expression and people expect they don't even expect to be shocked, because they're expecting authentic expression at extremes of uniqueness, you know?
Yeah, I love that. So talking about your book a little bit, because I know I've gotten off track, because
that's okay.
I love talking to you. It's fun.
Yeah.
how can our egos be inaccurate? Can you talk about that?
Yes. I'm sure everyone listening can relate to a time that someone has gossiped about them or made assumptions about them that were not true. This is interesting. I happen to have like a half sleeve on. A tattoo I got, you know, maybe 10 years ago. But I recall for the longest time, I judged a person's abilities to parent their children based on their outer appearances. If they had tattoos and piercings, I just thought, oh, they're irresponsible. Now, I don't know where that stemmed from. I'm sure it stemmed from some sort of thing that I saw as a child in my perceptions, you know. I perceived something along the way, but here I have really great friends who are covered head to toe in tattoos, some of them, and they provide better meals for their kids than I do. You know, they spend more time with their kids than I have been able to. You know, I'm trying my best, but you want to talk about me misjudging and miscalculating, just my ego kind of going off and labeling and identifying based on old perceptions and patterns that aren't even necessarily true about another. So how that's similar to flatulence is in when it's just hot air. It doesn't equate to anything truthful at all. You know, sometimes we think that the most beautiful women have the most success and that it's because they're beautiful, but we don't know that perhaps they've been sexually harassed, that maybe they don't get the job because the boss fears that there might be some question about how they got it. And another thing too, oftentimes people are overweight and people assume that they're lazy. And it could be so many medical issues. It could be other things emotionally that they're holding on to that as children they were victim of, you know, and they're just now as adults able to get a hold of it, but it's a lot to process. Yeah. So sometimes our egos can be, they mean well. but they're just an activity in addition to the human experience. They come with the body and they're here to help us, but that doesn't mean that they're always necessarily true. Sometimes they're just hot air. They literally, almost like a GPS, for another metaphor, they're here to help us navigate between these guardrails, you know, success and safety. This feels good. This does not feel good, you know? But sometimes we kind of, the ego can go off. You can't let the ego drive, you know, maybe back seat, but not drive, because then it goes off the guardrails past success into superiority, thinking we're better than someone, or over the guardrails of safety into inferiority, where we don't move, we don't budge, we're too afraid to make any steps. And so it's really like, okay, ego, I hear you, I acknowledge you, I observe what you're offering, and my higher self, my intuition knows that this feels good, that I do want to do this, you know, and that I'm not afraid to move forward in this. So so there's a lot of metaphors there. I play with metaphors a lot. I think it's important because that's, you know, our subconscious speaks in metaphors and images. But that's the intention of the book too. So when you think of just hot air, it's like sometimes with flatulence, you think it's going to be this solid piece of information, and instead we're just miscalculating and misperceiving based off old belief systems.
I love that. I love that. And so I just one last question before we get to your free gift.
Sure.
Talking about egos, you know, how do they show up in relationships, and how do how do we kind of let those egos go without hurting ourselves? Other people?
Sure. So I think it's important to know that we all have our own unique essence. We all have our own unique brand. And so again, what some people might tolerate, others might be extremely sensitive to. So being mindful of how it is that we're expressing and airing our egos. We're not to suppress them. We need to express, but finding like-minded people who can tolerate our expression, people that appreciate even us being ourselves and airing our opinions. This shows up in a lot of ways. Sometimes we get rosy cheeks. It's just this time it's the topside set, because we say things that embarrass ourselves or embarrass other people. So just being mindful again of how it is that we're airing our egos. Oftentimes it can be really difficult to clear the air. So again, if we're focusing on how it is that we're expressing and being aware of the consequences that may come based on what we're going to say and how we're airing it, we could avoid having to clear the air later. And I think the most important thing of how this shows up and how to move forward is the most important thing is we are around our ego all the time, and our internal dialogue, our mind chatter, that we are either not good enough or that we're better than another person, that is a silent but deadly. And we all know those. And those are the most toxic of all. So that it's so important that we do not let those thoughts fester inside of our head. We have to find a safe outlet, whether it's improv or it's close girlfriends that understand and will allow us to just kind of blast off. Because ultimately, letting go creates inner peace, no different than flatulence. It is simply our egos or just mind chatter. It's simply a part of the human experience. It's an activity no different than flatulence. And so what I call that is conscious crop dusting. It's being mindful of how we express, but it's not suppressing the expression, because that's when we get in a whole heap of trouble. So that's kind of just the gist of it, is to just be mindful when we're at the grocery store, when we're, you know, when we're in road rage traffic, when we're talking with a spouse or a friend, you know, just being mindful of how we express and air our opinions, and not suppressing, but being prepared for the consequences depending on how it is that we do air those things.
Mm. I love it. This has been awesome.
Thank you
so much. And for all of our listeners, Stevie Ann has. Did I say your name wrong?
No, that's accurate. This is Stevie Ann. And if I got upset about it, that'd be my ego. So don't you worry.
So Stevie Ann has a free gift, and it's the PDF of Egos Are Like Farts. So I'm excited for everybody to come on over to the blog and read that, because I'm excited to read it.
Yay! Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, you're very welcome. I know you're going to go far. This is great.
Oh, thank you. It's amazing. Earlier last year, I guess now we're in 2016, but in early of 2015, Pam Grout, she's a number one New York Times bestselling author, and she has multiple international bestsellers. She's a Hay House author, and she actually endorsed the book. That just, I know, it just blew my mind, and I just thought, goodness. Oh, my ego is happy about this. So, you know, again, the ego just here to, you know, help us navigate between success and safety. So that was a good one. was a fun one. And thank
great.
Goodness that we expressed and that you expressed for your listeners. It's, oh, what an honor. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Oh, you're very welcome. You're very welcome. All right, Stevie Ann, have a great day.
Thank you. You as well.
As always, we appreciate you listening to Women Reconnecting, where you get inspired to reconnect with who you really are and create a life that brings you joy. With each episode, we bring you new strategies to feel your best and discover new possibilities for your life. Make sure to listen again as we bring you new and exciting guests that will help you to keep moving forward along your path so you can have fun, play full out, and really feel alive. Until next time, enjoy life.